Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are here for the second episode of the Auctionable Offense podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my good buddy, the man with the sexiest beard in fantasy football, Zach. How you doing, Zach?
Man, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am good. I'm excited to get back into it, get our second show rolling with some strategy talk, maybe a little listener question action, and see where we ramble on from there.
Sounds good, man. Let's do this.
So we both kind of agree that an auction strategy is broken up into two main categories. From here, there's many subcategories and your levels of play, but basically you have a boom-bust strategy going for a couple big names, spending the big dollars and getting your guys. Or you have a more conservative strategy, filling your roster, getting some nice depth, and maybe raising your weekly floor a little bit. What do you think about these two strategies, Zach? What do you like to employ? And what do you think some pros and cons of each might be?
Well, typically, I'm a little bit more conservative. I like having more depth, and I shy away from more of the high-dollar players, typically. The pros for that for me are I typically always have extra players that I can start if I end up running into injuries or I have a lot of players on bye week. The downside is if I don't run into teams that have those same situations going on, it's often hard to start a lineup that's ultra competitive against them. It's depending on the way you manage your team after you draft, it can be kind of difficult. It is nice, in my opinion, to have, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 receivers or running backs that you can start at any given time. Well, probably not running backs, so the position's not quite that deep. But it's nice to have a lot of startable assets. It can make sit-start decisions pretty difficult from time to time, but it's typically the way I like to play. Some of the benefits to being more boom-bust is, you know, those aggressive strategies are how you end up with, you know, teams that have Odell Beckham, Todd Gurley, Antonio Brown, and Mike Evans all on one roster. The problem with them is sometimes your wide receiver 3 is Quincy Enunwa. You know, it can get tough. Now, hopefully,
that's right.
Nobody out there has, yeah, that's real rough. Hopefully nobody out there has Quincy Enunwa as their wide receiver 3, but the illustration I still think kind of stands. So they both have major pros and cons, and it really comes down to the type of player you are and the way you manage your team.
Yeah, I completely agree with a lot of those points, Zach. I think it's very important when you sit down at the auction table to start your league, you have to be very honest with yourself about what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. You need to take a good hard look at the league itself, the settings, scoring, roster. Take a good look at your league mates. What do you know about them? What are they traders? Are they stingy? Are they tight? Where are they at? Put all these things together and then you decide what you want to do from there. If you know you're in an ultra active league and you feel very confident about your trade values, you might want to risk a boom bust strategy. Get the best guys you can. They carry uber value. And go from there. You only need to hit one or two more pieces and have a little bit of luck. And Todd Gurley might carry you to another championship. But you miss on a couple of those backup players. Mike Evans, as Zach mentioned, he hasn't been necessarily a wide receiver 1 so hot. If he's your number 2, you might be lacking to another guy's number 2 and 3 and stuff like that. So understand where your league is and who you are. If you're not a strong trader, if you don't pursue a lot of trades, well, if you have a boom-bust draft and you lose one major piece, you could be in rough shape. So you may not want to go out and sell a guy or attempt to sell a guy that you just paid a real premium for. This could put you in some trouble.
Yeah, it's really important to constantly evaluate your roster throughout the season, especially.
Absolutely. Be fluid. Have some fluidity in all the situations you approach. Now, if you use more of a conservative strategy to one degree or another, you're going to be looking to get more depth, more value, and increase your weekly floor. chances are, if you come up against one of those boom bust teams and they put three quarters of it together, you're probably not going to beat them, or it'll be real close. But for a lot of teams, you're going to have them covered in more aspects than not, and that's going to give you a good chance at success. I personally use a little combination of both. I go conservative in that I try to get as much value as I can and make sure I have my bases fairly covered. But I go boom bust in that I try to get essentially the bottom guy out of each of my tiers in a way. So I want to get the cheapest guy in a certain tier. I don't want to get the most expensive guy. I want to get the cheapest guy. So I try to employ both of those to a small degree. Zach, when you're dealing with an auction draft and you see somebody clearly after a player or two is going after one essentially you'll see it more if they're going after a boom bust strategy. You notice a player is locked on to OBJ and Gurley right out of the gates. What do you maybe do to influence how he's going to spend a few more dollars?
Well, one of the things that I really like to do in situations like that is, especially if it's proxy bidding, first of all, I learned my lesson the hard way through a lot of these auctions. I don't price enforce anymore. I've gotten stuck with guys I don't want or stuck with bills that my ass can't pay. So, I don't price enforce, but I will quickly and aggressively bid those players up to my ceiling for them, knowing full well that it is highly unlikely that it is the same ceiling for other owners. So I want to get that money out as quickly as possible. And then if they're quick to respond, then I might bring out a player that I actually want if the room kind of seems like it would lend to allow me to win that player. If not, which is typically the case, I'm going to bring out another expensive player because you know there's always somebody else lying in wait, just drooling over the stakes of another player, thinking the same way that everybody else is. Oh, I'm going to let this jackass spend all his money on these two guys, and then I'm going to get my guys at a discount. You just don't allow it to happen. I throw out the high-dollar players that I think other people are going to go after, even if they're players that I want. If I know that ultimately I'm not going to be the one that's going to be able to afford them, I get them out on the block as quick as possible. It's one of those things that you just kind of have to do from time to time. The quicker other people spend their money, the better the values that you potentially are able to get. Charlie, what do you think?
Most definitely. If I see that guy's locked on to OBJ and Gurley, I can't nominate Kelsey or Aaron Rodgers or Evan Ingram fast enough. They will be the next person I put up on that board. Because I know I'm not going to get any one of those guys. Actually. Absolutely.
Yeah, so when you're doing that, do you try to target the same positions or different positions from where those high-dollar players are? So, for instance, if rich owner A is going after Odell Beckham and Todd Gurley, and there are two or three other wide receiver one types out there, are you pulling out more wide receiver ones, or do you throw up, you know, Travis Kelce or another running back? Or does it not even necessarily matter in your opinion?
This is going to seem like one of those kind of copped out answers that we're going to come back to a lot on this podcast, but it always depends on what I see in that particular auction. That is a way that I do stay fluid. I experiment a little bit, and when I get a feel that that technique or that strategy isn't going to work on that auction board, I don't generally try it again. For example, sometimes you'll see a bunch of the high dollar position players up there at one time. So you'll have OBJ and Evans and Antonio Brown and Hopkins and, I don't know, Cooper. I guess he kind of doesn't fit with that group so much. Michael Thomas. So all those guys are up there and they're all bringing in big dollars. Now, I've tried in some auctions where I'll throw in a guy that I really like, but I know he's a step or two below them and see if I can sneak him through, like Cooks or Sammy Watkins, maybe Allen Robinson, and see if the attention can be drawn away by those bigger names and my guy might slide through. Sometimes that doesn't work, and what happens is your guy jumps up to a price well above where you're going to pay because there's a bit of a positional hard-on going on the auction board. So sometimes when I see that going on, I'll go the other way, and okay, everybody's going after wide receivers, they're looking real good, I'll try to sneak a different position through, but I don't try a number one of that position. If all those receivers are up there, I'm not going to try to sneak through Alvin Kamara. I'm not going to try to sneak through Evan Ingram. But I might try to sneak through Zach Ertz, Hunter Henry-ish, or maybe Joe Mixon, or something like that. A step down where they don't seem as enticing to those flashy names on the board.
So you go after a teardrop, essentially, is what it sounds like. A teardrop either in that position or a tier below in a separate position. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. I try to drop down a tier to a place I'm still very comfortable. And I'm hoping it just looks less appealing considering what else is on that board. And it'll slide through. While those fancy names keep bouncing around, they drop down overnight, kick back up in the morning, my player hopefully just keeps dropping.
I sometimes have a little bit of a term for this. It's not for this specific thing, but I'm a hater of sexy dynasty rosters, and I'm sure pretty much everybody knows what this is, but it's the rosters with all of the players that it's essentially just all ascending players. Players who maybe haven't proven anything, but they're young, maybe they're coming into their own. They're players on the rise, but their current ADP or their current rankings aren't reflective of where they've actually been. So, a player that would fit this, I would say, would be Sammy Watkins last year. He'd played well enough, but he was still being viewed, I think at this time last year, he was maybe in like the wide receiver 9 to 12 range. That's off the top of my head, so if that's wrong, don't kill me on Twitter. But he hadn't done anything to warrant that rating yet. We all thought we saw what was coming and that he was going to be this incredible player, but he hadn't quite been able to put it together yet. So while everybody's bidding on these sexy players, you pull out guys that maybe don't give people that same stiff positional hard on, like I guess a good example with the same timeline would have been Larry Fitzgerald. He was seen as kind of an aging wide receiver 3 or 4, putting up wide receiver 1 or 2 numbers. Now that goes into a totally different strategy of whether you go old or young, but as far as type of player as viewed by the dynasty community, it's a similar thing. So I do a pretty similar thing to what you're doing with how you auction, but a lot of times what I do, instead of just going a tier lower, I might try that and see if it backfires on me or not, but I really like to go like, oh, everybody's spending buku bucks on these high-end wide receiver ones. I wonder if I can sneak in this wide receiver 4 that I think's probably going to play like a 2 or 3. And I guess a name that comes to mind is Golden Tate. It's not a sexy name, but he's going to put up solid numbers for you most of the time. And so that's one of the strategies that I try to employ when people are going crazy over big names. I just drop in a little name that not a lot of people are totally into. Everybody would like to have him on their roster, but early on in an auction, not a lot of people are willing to put the money into it. So really similar to what you do, and that's probably why a lot of the leagues that we're in, we end up fighting over players or trying to figure out how, you know, it's like this mental chess game against one another. So yeah, it's definitely a similar strategy. Has different effects on rosters. It starts me off a lot of times with I pick up my depth pieces early, and sometimes I paint myself into a corner where while everybody spends all their big money on the big names, I pick up a few depth pieces, and then once I reevaluate, I realize, shit, I have four wide receiver fours, and the best players left on my board are twos and threes, and I'm going to end up probably paying high-end two money for all of them, or I'm just going to end up trying to rotate through, you know, six or seven fours.
Now, what I've seen you do with that strategy, though, Zach, is what you just said about how you start off grabbing some of those value pieces and then reevaluate is essentially what you did in the first two Bullhorn leagues, where you started off that way and then said, well, damn, I've got a winning team ready to go. All I got to do is keep adding a couple more pieces. And lo and behold, you won both of those leagues last year. So you didn't set out that way, I don't think. You didn't say, I want all this value slightly on the older side, maybe one or two pieces of youth. That's what you were fighting me for. Because Zach, the teams that Zach doesn't like is much of my teams. Ascending talent that busts as often as it booms. Hence why I'm, you know, lose more often than I win.
I'm an ageist. I look 10 years older than I actually am. I can't get on board with these young kids. My knees are 60 years old. I'm a 32-year-old man. I just can't buy into this stuff, you know? I think Juju Smith-Schuster might be the only young kid I got on any teams. You know, I'm an ageist to a fault, but I'm the opposite kind of ageist from most other people. You know, just, I don't know. It's just the way I play.
Well, I'm the same way, except the flip side of the coin. I generally start off going for my value ascending pieces that I covet, and I end up being on the younger side and thinking, well, there's no point in me adding a Larry Fitzgerald now. He's a great player. He's going to put up points, but I'm clearly putting together some form of a soft punt here. So I don't want Larry Fitzgerald's points because I can't trade him for what he's worth week 8. So I need to spend that auction dollar in another way right now. So you got to let those guys slide in the hopes that you get this. You know, sounds kind of gross when you're talking about a Hall of Famer and Larry Fitzgerald, but a guy I like is like a D.D. Westbrook this year. Or last year, it was Devin Funchess. I took Devin Funchess all over. In a league I drafted last year, chances are pretty good I had Devin Funchess. Now, a good hit on my ascending talent was almost any team I drafted last year. Chances are, it also has Stephon Diggs. Because that's the type of player that I go after that I see as the bottom of a tier and going to be the cheapest, but has just as much opportunity to ascend as the other guys in his team that cost a lot more in his tier. Pardon me.
Yeah, you've touched on this a couple times actually already in this podcast or this episode, and I think it really deserves reinforcement. It is often, but not always, beneficial to get as many players on the board as possible in the same positional tier and hold back, if you can, the one or two people at the bottom. Watch everybody spend a bunch of money on the rest of the tier of that player and then try and target at maybe a 5, 10, 15% discount the bottom of the tier. You might not necessarily be getting your number one player, but if you have 6 or 8 players in the same tier, essentially what you're telling yourself is they should be within about a 1 point per game average from one another, depending on how you build your tiers. And, you know, I'm really a big, I'm a big proponent of not paying too much for points. And while I don't necessarily calculate that in a real tangible way, going after the bottom of a tier is a way that you can kind of ensure that you don't pay too much for your points. Now, granted, this is all saying that we have 100% clairvoyance, and we know that, you know, this tier of 6 or 8 players is going to play out to be within maybe 20 points of one another. So you say, oh, well, I'm going to get, you know, for 5% less auction dollars, I'm going to get the bottom of that tier, and my point per dollar is going to end up being far less. You know, that's just the assumption of clairvoyance. But I think this is a good way that you build your tiers and a good way that you bargain shop even at your, you know, wide receiver 1 and 2 and running back 1 and 2 positions.
Yeah, that's right. As you say, you build your tiers, and then I personally like to get the guy that I value as the cheapest in that tier. More or less, if I can get one of the guys higher for a value I'm happy with, great. Yay for me. No problem. I'm all for it. I'm certainly not going to hold back. But the ones that I really think, okay, that's my guy, I'm going to get that guy, is the one that I perceive that's going to be the cheapest out of that tier. But yeah, you touched on a little bit. It's the conservative side is you're playing money ball. And to me, I feel you really should employ some degree of that no matter what strategy you go after. If you're going boom bust, that's cool. Go for it. But then go after the absolute top guys. The number ones, you got to get OJ and Todd Gurley and another top five dynasty guy. I don't feel you want to go boom bust by paying too much for sort of the next tier down of those uber studs. Boom bust to me, you got to go for the absolute top market values, and then you have the chance to turn that into a windfall. And then you can build a monster dynasty team. The moneyball factor comes in for me in my tiers because I feel the tier is, as Zach was saying, quite relative in the points they're going to score. So if I can get my player at a 10 to 20 to 30% price discount on the top player in that team, that's a huge win on the dollar per point scored window. And that's a window I like to be in. I've had decent success hitting good value in that range. So Zach, let's transition a little bit. We've got a couple really great listener questions that I'd like to touch on tonight.
Yeah. Hey, real quick before we get into that, I want to say one more thing about some of these, tiers and going after the best value in them. One thing that I've seen work really, really well for a lot of the boom bust type of auction drafters is, an exceptionally high level of aggression instantly out of the gate. So, oftentimes the early bird gets the worm on some of these things. So if you are an aggressive auctioner and you want Odell Beckham, go out there, bid him up high right away, because if he is your wide receiver one overall, chances are pretty high that you're going to see a few guys in that wide receiver 2 to 6 range end up going for more money than Odell Beckham. Because the players who want to go after that top talent but are afraid to spend right away end up getting really scared that they're not going to have that top-tier talent. So they end up overpaying and paying more for the other top-tier talent than you did for the tippy-top peak of Mount Everest talent. So
very good point.
If you really want that, well, I guess this year it's either Odell Beckham or Nuke. If you want one of those two guys, you go out there and you sprint to the finish line. You get that top bid as quickly as you can, and you hold it. And I would say probably 3 out of 4 times you're going to see a few other players that are top tier but below your number one player. They're going to end up going for more money. I've seen it time and time again. I won't throw a full guarantee out there, but I think in the last 4 auctions I've been in, I have seen early players go for a slight discount over players who have been bid up on day 2, 3, and 4.
Absolutely. As soon as OBJ and Nuke and Michael Thomas slide off the board at their price, people get real antsy looking at Julio and Mike Evans and, you know, even guys like AJ Green, who in a snake draft might start to slip when you see those auction dollars and you start to think, oh, he's in the last of an upper echelon, I got to get one of those guys, he might get taken a little earlier.
Yeah, you got to remember in these auction drafts, ADP means almost nothing because people get antsy and they may be planning on spending the 112 worth of dollars on a player and get scared, and it ends up, you know, being the 3rd or 4th highest player that gets bid up.
That's right, because in an auction draft, there's going to be a dozen guys that go for the value of the 103.
Exactly.
All right, well, that's a great point. So as I said, we've got a couple really great questions, and they do tie into a few of the points we were talking about anyway tonight, so that works well. I want to start off with a question from a great guy, somebody we both, I think, played in leagues with and chatted with on Voxer and Twitter. Great IDP mind, Mr. Bill Latin. He says, overall optimal auction strategies. So as we touched on tonight, I feel, and I know Zach agrees, but he can give some extra points to it, that you have to be honest with yourself and your strengths. Your strengths should dictate your optimal strategy, based with the league, of course, but your strengths first should dictate your best optimal strategy, because there is no optimal for a whole league or a whole group. It's yours. What works for you, that's what's optimal. So you take your strengths and you find what is going to put the best team together that you're happy with. That's how you're going to find the optimal strategy for you.
Yeah, I will. I'll just go ahead and just kind of the way that I typically approach an auction is I will make like a Google Doc or a Google Sheet, actually, and I'll just put in all of my tiers, typically by position, and then I leave columns for how much they get bought for, and then on a separate page I'll put starting requirements and number of bench spots, and I'll just kind of build a budget from there. And from there, I kind of let the league dictate where I'm going to go with it. Now, I don't let people push me around, but if I think in this league I need to spend 70% of my budget on my starting lineup, and I see that, oh, crap, if I spend 75 or 80%, it looks like I'm going to go from having a really solid starting lineup that can compete to maybe having the best. Then I'm going to adjust where I am with my values, and I bid higher. I think the optimal strategy, in addition to what Charlie was saying about knowing who you are and how you play, is that you have to be prepared to pivot. And like we said in episode one, we're going to say this a million times on this podcast, if you're not able to pivot and employ a new mindset to how you're building your rosters, then you're going to have a really hard time in these auctions. It's difficult in a standard drafting league to be able to put together a quality team and a good starting lineup and a good bench and all these things that we're going to talk about all the time on here. It's even harder in an auction league, I think, because you have 11 other people who don't know exactly where their next player or pick is slotting in. So everybody is constantly reevaluating. So you need to consistently reevaluate your roster, reevaluate where your money is going, and reevaluate on whether or not you're competing year one or if you're building a team for the long term, or if you can do both at the same time. And if you can, wow, you've got yourselves like the holy grail of a roster right there. And I will bow before you because you are a fantasy god. I mean, it's not easy to build a roster that's going to win year 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7. You know, like, it just doesn't happen so often.
That's right. You usually can't have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, and you were talking about those bullhorn rosters that I have. Well, this year, the outlook is not quite as good as last year. I think this year, if I don't do any rebuilding, I might end up, you know, finishing top 5. And then next year, maybe top 8. You know, they're not necessarily aging, but I definitely caught some players that were, you know, they were at their peak, and now they're kind of coming down, hitting that valley at the end of their career. So there isn't necessarily one strategy that is the best. It's really, I guess if I want to put it in a nutshell, the best auction strategy is the one that probably nobody else in that particular league is employing. If you can find, you know, quickly on what nobody else is doing, and you do that, you're either A, going to be setting yourself up for some quick wins because everybody's punting, or everybody's going for the quick wins and you're going to have a good long-term roster, or maybe you are being able to find that balanced roster. I don't know. What do you think? Is there really something that you find to be the best or the most optimal?
Well, I don't know if it's best or optimal, but a strategy and tool that I always employ, you're a lot more technical than I am, so you use spreadsheets and all that stuff. I'm a pen and paper guy. I sit down.
Yeah, I'm a nerd.
I look at my league settings, I look at my starting requirements. That's number one. Okay, so I can see that you can start up to four running backs. That's going to put them at a premium. You can start up to, see, we play IDP leagues too. So we're going to talk about a lot of IDP stuff on this podcast as well. So tackle premium leagues, if you see that in that league you can start five, six linebackers, linebackers are going to be a major premium. Okay, so I dictate these positions are a premium and I'm going to spend a higher percentage of my budget on them. So now I break those ones out. I get the big ones first because it's going to take up the most. And now I look through and I say, well, it's only start one quarterback league. So I'm not going to spend more than 10% of my entire budget on hopefully three quarterbacks. It's only start one. It's mandatory start one cornerback league. So I'm going to totally punt that and maybe spend 2 or 3% of my budget and stream from there. Things like that. That is what I find valuable because you've always got that reference to come back to. You can always have that to look at, see the auction board, see who's on there, and know if there's some value sitting there that you should be plucking, or maybe a little bit of price enforcing to do.
Yeah, I think one cool thing that you just pointed out, you know, we do play in a lot of IDP leagues, and one of the things that we didn't mention earlier that you can do is, especially if you're playing in an IDP league with balanced scoring, where, you know, maybe your linebackers score similarly to wide receivers, is when other people are spending the big money on the big, beautiful names, you know, maybe you end up with two or three linebacker ones at a respectably small amount of money. So that's another strategy that you can do there. And I know Bill is all about getting his IDPs for a good price. And I don't know that I'm in any... Actually, I'm positive I'm not in any IDP leagues right now with Bill, and we need to remedy that. Also, it is a crying shame that your Pigs 3 team is not Pig Latin and that it's another owner. When I saw that, oh man, Bill, I thought it was you.
Yeah, that's just ironic. You've got a guy in the league with the last name Latin and he doesn't get to take the pig's name Pig Latin. I don't know. I think it's Tim that has that. And knowing Tim, he probably did it because he knows he's going to be able to sell it to Bill somewhere down the road for $5.
Hey, man, I respect that.
Yeah, so anybody out there playing IDP, make sure you go and follow Bill Latin on Twitter. Great guy, super nice, and very, very knowledgeable IDP mind.
Yeah, if you know one of us out of Charlie and I, and you don't
know Bill... You're doing it wrong.
I don't know how that even happened. What, I don't know.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong if you play IDP and you don't know Bill Latin, but you know one of us.
Yeah, and while you're at it, follow Tom Degenerate as well. He's over the last year and a half, he's become probably my favorite new IDP follow. Dude is a genius, and he's from across the pond, so you got to really respect that. So if you're not following both of these two guys, they're a big part of the reason that I even put together competitive rosters in IDP leagues.
Actually, I'm fortunate that Tom has joined one of the FF Ghost leagues that I play in this offseason. So I'm going to get a chance to probably get fleeced in a trade by him on a linebacker. I can't wait. Oh, and that's my
Loki.
Puppy.
Quiet down, bro.
Yeah, my puppy Loki. He's the neighborhood watch. So now we've got Ryan Early, who says to us, should you just nominate players you anticipate being overvalued early in an auction, or should you try to sneak in a second tier guy you want before the market is set? So these are a couple points that we just touched on, and now we can expand on it just a little bit.
Yeah, I would I'd say to both of those questions, yes and yes, depending on how everybody else is bidding. If you can sneak in players that are going to pull out a lot more money, go for it. Or if you think, you know, there's a chance you can get one of your second tier players for cheaper, go for that. One way to kind of judge on whether or not that's going to work out is maybe pull out a second tier player that's at the top of his tier and see how expensive he goes. And that might be a way for you to reevaluate on whether you think you can actually get a value or not. So essentially you're pulling out a player that you want, but you aren't in love with, I guess, is kind of what I'd say. But yeah, both of those things are great ways to manipulate an auction room. They're both things that I do all the time, and they've worked for me quite well. Charlie?
Absolutely. Like I said, I try to sneak my guy in there, but if I see real quick that it's not going to work, I pivot off of that, and my next nomination is likely going to be the guy that I see is the most valuable that I do not want. He's going to get nominated. I'm going to try and suck some more dollars out of the auction room. All right, now we got another one from Cameron. Cameron says, do you nominate players you're already strong in to suck cash out from other teams? So I think that's a bit of a continuation, but go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, if I feel like I'm set at a position, especially early on, even though I typically have a conservative approach to a lot of auctions, if I end up, you know, within the first 35 receivers, I feel like I have a solid three or four, depending on starting requirements, I might start pulling out the rest of those top 35 guys if there's two or three available. And because I know that if I already have more than I need out of that group, that there are people who have less. And either A, they're going to get bid too high by the couple guys that are still fighting over them, or those guys are going to continue to let the position slide, and I can get even stronger at a lower dollar amount. So, yeah, if I'm strong at a position, I am definitely going all out to get those guys out on the board. It's another thing where you're trying to suck out as much money as you can. My goal is always to get to the end of an auction and see that I end up with a strong team with a lot of depth, and I still have more money than everyone. So then at that point in time, when you're actually going out to get your guys, you know, all the sleepers that you love, nobody can stop you at that point. So if you're right and you evaluated those players accurately, then year two and three, when those guys start breaking out, your roster's just even stronger than it was to begin with.
Yeah, for sure. If I'm in a position for my nomination where there isn't a guy that I feel I can get in for a reason, so the board isn't dictating to me that I can maybe get one of my running backs, tight ends, whatever, on there, and I'm set at wide receiver, for example, then I'm definitely going to look at trying to go with that play of getting the most valuable guy on that board and getting some more cash out of there. I don't necessarily want to risk putting one of my guys up there and having to pay too much, fight for him, or let him go. And I don't want to waste a nomination. If I've got a guy that I do want to get up, if there's a good time, you take those spots, I feel. But if there's not, then you use that opportunity to suck more cash out.
Yep, totally agree.
So what else do you think, Zach? What have you, what's some things you've learned over the last couple years? I'm not going to say your whole career, because, you know, you never stop learning and there's major lessons, but just say in the last couple years, we've done a couple big auction drafts over the last 2 years. We just did pigs. I know we both learned lessons that we talked about from pigs in the previous episodes, but just in general, what's some lessons you've learned in the last, say, 2 years?
I think the hard lessons that I've had to learn is a few of the things that I push really hard now, and I'm pretty vocal about. You have to be able to reevaluate where you are. I have one league. It's not an auction league, but it's a league that's been in existence. I think we're going into year 7 now, and it was my first real IDP league where you're starting more than just one or two positions. We start 9 IDPs, and that's a fair amount. And I spent 3 seasons in a, well, let's see, if it's been in, if this is year 7, I spent 4 or 5 seasons as kind of a middle of the road roster. Year 1, I was a playoff team. Year 2, I should have been a playoff team, but the injury bug just kind of caught me. One of those things that happened. And instead of being smart and selling off some of my aging assets, I just kind of jacked around for too long, and I ended up being a middle-of-the-road team for 3 or 4 years in a row, and I'm now in year 3 of a real rebuild on that team. I've turned over nearly all of my roster, and I gave up a lot of really good players because it was time to get young, or time to get players that, while maybe they weren't putting up a ton of points right now, I saw that in their future they had the potential to do something. I kind of had to go after those potential guys. And, you know, I just in this past year, I finally was able to unload Larry Fitzgerald in that league, and it pained me because I love getting those Larry Fitzgerald type of points. But he wasn't doing anything for me. You know, essentially, he was causing my draft pick to be worse.
He's hurting your draft capital.
Even though I knew that I wasn't... Yep, exactly. My draft capital was going down the toilet, even though my chances of making the playoffs weren't going anywhere. A couple years ago, I convinced myself that I was a true contender. I ended up, I was 6-1, or I was 5-1 or 6-1 after week 6 or 7. And I lost, I think it was DeMarco Murray that year. I lost him to injury. And so I thought, you know what, I need a running back too. And I put together a running back too, and I'm the favorite to win this league. I lost all but one game to finish the year because I had tricked myself into thinking that I had a team that was full of legitimate contenders. And I think that's something that every owner needs to really focus on is what are you truly right now with the roster you currently have? And that's that goes for day two of an auction all the way through the history of a league. You've got to evaluate where you are. And sometimes you got to understand you're donating to the pot for the next 2 or 3 years. And honestly, those are some of the most fun years, I think, when you're really building a roster. It's great to win a league right off the bat. Don't get me wrong. Anytime I can do that, I'm happy to. It pays my league fees for a couple years, and it's nice to get that championship. But it's also really fun to rebuild a team. And so, you know, if I've got a league where I know I'm coming up to a rebuild, I've screwed around, or I've been pushing for championships and ended up getting old, I actually really love a rebuild. And so I guess that constant roster evaluation is probably the biggest thing that I've learned over the last few years. Don't get complacent and don't think that you are something that you aren't.
Yeah.
What have you learned, Charlie?
Yeah, you definitely be honest with yourself. Don't let your hubris get in the way. I've been guilty of, as I said, I tend to drift towards the younger teams, like in some of that young flash. And now I've learned that that's the way I go, and that's fine. I don't often expect to win in year one anymore. There's very few leagues I come out of the gate thinking I've legitimately got a good shot to win this year. The vast majority of my leagues, I think, okay, year two, I'm ramping up hard. And if not year two, year three, I'm a serious contender if the wheels stay on this wagon. One thing I've learned in the auctions in the last couple years is while I, you know, will generally preach more of a conservative strategy, I do believe you got to go hard to the hole for your guys. If you keep pulling back, you keep pulling back, you're going to be left with a meh roster at the end of it and a pocket full of cash that's generally in most leagues, unless it's a pigs or maybe a kitchen sink or some quite nuanced league, it's going to be fairly useless. You lose a lot of value on it. So get your game plan, make your tiers, evaluate your talent and your strategy any way you want. But when you have it, follow through with it. Don't be gun shy. Sometimes it's going to go above your price point. That's fine. But $5 today in the startup auction that seems like it's breaking your budget is not going to matter. You won't even consider it 6 months ago from now when you have your guy. That's what will matter. 6 months from now, if you look at the rosters, and I've been there, and you think, man, that guy went for that. That guy went for that. I could have 4 of those guys right now. You will hate it for a very, very long time. And in my opinion, that is much worse than essentially punting for a year or two and knowing, okay, I'm not winning this year. I'm not going to be in the playoffs. I get that. That's fine. To me, it's much harder the other way.
Yeah, really good point. That's actually probably another lesson that I've had to learn is don't get too tied up in the small dollar increments. It's, you know, if your budget in an auction is $1,000 and you're worrying about $5, I mean, come on, it's $5. It's like a millionaire worried about, you know, like Jay-Z a few months ago with the $80,000 bar tab or whatever ridiculousness it was. And it turns out if you factor that into normal people money, it was $50. I mean, come on.
Was that the bar tab where he's buying all his own product? I think I saw something about that.
Yeah. Yeah, not only was he spending a buttload of money,
pimping but it was his all, own high priced product. Great marketing. Great marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you guys want to try this vodka over here? Yeah, I own it.
I own it.
It's like when I go out to bars or whatever and I order, you know, my own brewery's beer. It's like, yeah, you know, I might be paying $5 for a pint, but I know a buck of that's coming straight back to me.
Because you're wearing this shirt still.
That's right.
So, something we learned, some hard lessons, we've gone through that. I don't know, I think it's been a great second show. I really appreciate the listener questions. Zach and I were talking today, as everybody knows, there's a lot of podcast guys out there, there's a lot of podcasts. The listeners make the show. The listeners out there, the fantasy community, that's what makes these shows. It makes everybody excited and jazzed to keep working. And, you know, appreciate the people out there. You know, be kind, be nice, be honest, challenge them. I've been saying this a lot lately on Twitter. Challenge people, but be respectful, be kind. Understand whether it's a gong show of a podcast like this that's full of technical difficulties and we don't sound very good yet, we're trying and we're putting our time and effort into it. You get things like these amazing draft guides that are coming out right now from multiple great sources. These gentlemen put in months and hundreds of hours of painstaking work away from their families, away from their other hobbies to put these out. So don't shit on them. Don't just passively dismiss all their work. Challenge them, disagree with them, but be respectful, be kind. So Zach, why don't you give some parting shots?
Yeah, man, I'm right there with you. Actually, as I set up the Twitter account for this podcast, I kind of just went through my own personal follower list and was just, I followed just tons of people because, you know, I want this podcast to follow the good people that I currently follow. And it was actually really interesting as I got deeper and deeper into the list, seeing a lot of the names that I don't see often anymore that, you know, either they were people who were coming up in the fantasy or draft community at the same time as me, or they were already like big names and now, you know, maybe they're married and have kids and a normal career or whatever. And it really kind of made me appreciate some of those guys. One name that really comes to mind is Ryan Lones. If anybody remembers him, he was doing some awesome draft work several years ago. And I just loved following his stuff. And I haven't heard much from him lately. I know he still tweets, you know, a little bit. To kind of go along with what Charlie says, you know, make sure that you appreciate the people that you're around. It's really cool kind of the impact that some of these people make on you. I have people that I've been, you know, building relationships with over the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years just through Twitter. And a lot of those people are, you know, pretty important to me. And I actually, on a little bit of a serious note, I have had a former coworker who found out today passed away. A little bit of a drug overdose. And so I guess on a serious note, I just want to say if you're struggling with anything and you need some help, you need someone to care about you, just, you know, if you don't have people around you that you feel like are loved ones or people that you can kind of lean on, just hit one of us up. I mean, we take this kind of shit seriously. You know, you do you and you know, whatever you're into, you're into. But if you get to a point where you feel like there's some changes that you want to make or changes that you need to make, you know, find the help that you need. You know, there's people out there that they get it. And you know, this is a rough week for me. 2 days ago was a birthday for a high school friend of mine, and he's been gone for 4 years now. And so, you know, it's just one of those things. You got to look out for the people that you love and take every opportunity you can to remind the people that you care about that they're important to you. You know, just, you know, take care of each other out there.
Yeah, that's right. You know, always think about it, you know, like Joe Dirt says, is this where you want to be when Jesus comes back? You know, do you want to be shitting all over somebody's draft guide when Jesus comes back? No, you don't. Life's too short, you know, and like Zach said, he's had some challenges, and my last month has been crazy with the same thing. I was the first on the scene to a gentleman that passed away that had his truck on top of him. I've never seen anything like it. On Friday, I'm going to a funeral for a 15-year-old boy that decided he had no other options. That's not the way. It's not how it needs to be, and there's tough times, but there's a lot of amazing people, even just in this fantasy community, who would give you an ear, would give you so much more than an ear if you needed it. So, yeah, great point, Zach. People every day are struggling, so be kind. Try to make the world a better place. I'm a big believer in that. Lord knows I've been an asshole more times than I'd like to admit, and I'll have many more dances with the devil. But overall, I'm a believer and trying to live in the idea that if we all just make the world a little bit better, those ripples in a pond will spread.
Yeah, man. 2018's been a fucked up year so far. It's just some crazy stuff's happening. But, yeah, man. Hey, real quick. Round one of the draft is coming up. What's a crazy draft prediction that you have? Either player, team, picks, trades, whatever. What's a crazy prediction you got?
Crazy. It's hard to hit. How does anybody hit a crazy prediction in the month draft month? I mean, there's been so many crazy things. What could you even say? No quarterbacks.
Dude, no
quarterbacks get taken in the top five. I mean, that would be crazy. And certainly nobody's said it. And it won't happen. But please, I don't know. Crazy? I don't know. What do you got? Inspire me.
All right, so this one's crazy, but it, at the very least, it's plausible. I don't think it's probable, but it's plausible. So I think the Giants. Okay, so I don't really think the Giants are going to make their are going to trade too. I think they probably end up making a pick there. But I'm kind of 50-50 on it. So here's what I think. I think the Browns go QB at one, and then at four. They trade back with the Bills, and they end up with 12 and 22. And then on top of that, I think they trade 35, not 33. I think they keep 33 because that trade value goes crazy overnight. So I think they take 35 and move back into those last three or four picks of the round. And I think they take four first-round picks this year. It's wild. It really is, but...
They've got the capital.
I think we could see that happening. Yeah. So, that would be seven first-round picks between last year and this year. And, of course, you know, once these players hit their fifth-year options, I mean, it becomes pretty difficult to keep everybody. But, I mean, just, you know, Sashi Brown that shit and make it work. I think the Browns end up making four first-round picks. And we'll know really early in the day on Thursday if I'm right or not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. How do you come up with a hot take? Because even that, well, crazy, because no team, I don't think, has had four first-round picks.
I don't think so.
It's in no way crazy to say that this year should or could or will have the most trades in the first round. I think there's going to be crazy action, whether it's inspired by the quarterbacks or not. Probably, that's what seems to be the driving force at this point. But I definitely think we're going to see a record amount of trades. And because of those quarterbacks and a few of the nice defensive prospects that are going to create trades into the second round, I think there's going to be a lot of nice offensive pieces going in the second round. I think big RB round for round two.
Yeah, probably like four, maybe five running backs in the second round is kind of what it seems like it might be. And three to five receivers. I mean, the second round in the NFL draft is going to really... give those trade back kind of rookie draft owners the potential to get some meat and potatoes for their rosters.
Yeah.
I fucking love draft season.
A hot take, I guess. I don't know. It's probably too late by what a lot of people are saying, but I called a few, give or take, 6 weeks ago that with the, I know you saw this one too, with the Packers third round pick, I want to say it's like 76-ish, that they take ESB, That would be for me just a dream. But I see a lot of people mocking him maybe to the second round Packers pick. Even better. Better draft capital.
I would love the Packers to take my boy EQ. I would absolutely love it. And for the record, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm a beer guy, so for me, ESB stands for Extra Special Bitter. It's a beer thing, so I am fully on board with calling him EQ or EQSB.
However, say that again.
I won't crap on anybody saying ESB. It's fine. It's fine. I'm just fully on team with the Q. Just kind of person
okay,
I am.
Grab
right
a
now.
Q tip and clean out your ears, and don't ever say that again. No, I get it. Say whatever you want. I don't know. I just to me, it's an extra letter that I don't know doesn't have the same flow. It's not as smooth.
Can you pronounce his first name?
Equinemius?
That could very well be right. And so I say it in my head. And in my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, super. Yeah, I got it. But I don't, I'll never say his name out loud. So I think it's Equinemius. But, let's remember, I'm a white dude living in Indiana. So I don't know shit about pronouncing shit.
How many comments do you think we're going to get on our podcast about the funny accents? I think there'll be a few.
Yeah, and well, so it's kind of funny. I was raised in Indiana, born in Pennsylvania, but I mean, raised from a baby in Indiana. So I've got a little bit of that Eastern Pennsylvania, and I also lived in the South for a year. So I have like that quote unquote like pure English accent or non accent, but then I also throw in like Eastern Pennsylvania with some Southern. And on top of that, I'm just really kind of a mush mouth. So, yeah, we're probably going to get some people that make some mention over, you know, Canada mixed with fuck all from America. You know, it's just, you know, it's the life.
No, that's
of
all right. As long as they can put up with the rambling accents, hopefully we bring them a few laughs and enough good knowledge. And what I consider important, I hope we make people think, because you can't just lead a horse to water. You know, I want to make people think. I want to get them to come to better ideas on their own, you know, develop better strategies on their own just by being inspired to think of things in different ways. Because truthfully, I don't think.
Yeah, man.
I know I'm not that smart. I just want to try to inspire people a little bit. I want to try and make people laugh and hopefully bring some good knowledge and down the road, a few great guests.
Yeah, man. I feel you. So hopefully the listeners are right. You know, anytime you and I get our heads together, we're going to ramble on for a long time. Actually, we're about to hit an hour on this episode. I think the last one ended up being right around an hour, too. You know, we get to talking. I guess if you want to follow the pod, you can find us on Twitter at AuctionPod. And if for some reason you want to follow me as an individual, it's at BonnerFett. If you can't figure out how to spell it, just look at the device you're using. It will be in the description. And then Charlie, go ahead, send us out, man.
Yeah, that's right. If you want to give me a follow, which I don't highly recommend, because I'll probably end up just making you mad. I get blocked a lot. But if you want to take that chance, it's CoolHandCP3. So anyway, I think it's been a great second show. I hope the rambling didn't bother anybody, but we appreciate you guys giving us a shot. And I guess from Zach and I, we're going to sign off. And thank you very much, everybody. See you next time.
Thanks, everyone.